Indie Media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 Indie Media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests, which shut down the World Trade Organization summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open to all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
The world is waking outside my window. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Drags my senses into the sunlight, for there are things that I must do. Wish me luck now, I have to leave you. Ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. With my friends now, up to the city. We're gonna shake the gates of hell. And I will tell them, we will tell them. Bella, ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. That our sunlight is not for franchise. I wish the bastards dropped down dead. Next time you see me, I may be smiling.
Coming up on the show today, we have lots of news from May Days around the world and Beltane celebrations.
Is Beltane. That
Beltane. I've been corrected on how to say Beltane. And we have news from Trident Ploughshares. We have news from Jo Wilding as well from her recent kidnap ordeal. But first of all, this week is the Iraqi Procurement 2004 Meet the Buyers. Iraqi Procurement is sponsored by Shell, De La Rue, Volvo, Chevron Texaco, ExxonMobil, I suppose that's Shell, and Oxy, delightful. And on their website it says Iraqi Procurement 2004 Meet the Buyers. The reconstruction of Iraq is one of the biggest projects to have been undertaken in over 50 years. May 2003 saw the UN Security Council provide the US and UK with a mandate to take control of Iraq and to use the revenue generated by the export of oil to rebuild the country. It doesn't get more blatant than that. This move ended all economic sanctions imposed on Iraq since the Gulf War in the early 90s. The reconstruction of Iraq, planned to take over the next 5 years, is expected to cost in excess of $100 billion. At least half of this figure will account for projects to be subcontracted to outside companies. Windrush Communications, the official global communication partners of the Arab-British Chamber of Commerce, is proud to present an exclusive opportunity for international companies to meet the key Iraqi business leaders and decision makers on the 26th to the 28th of April 2004. A high-level delegation will hold a forum in central London with the following specific intentions: to meet suppliers of goods and
services, to form partnering agreements, to sign procurement contracts. Companies and organisations from around the world will gather at Iraq Procurement 2004, Meet the Buyers, to discuss the wide range of economic opportunities available. So this event is going to be held in central London. Now, it puts it blatantly, that is what the war was about. So in response to this, a group of comprising people from ISM and Voices in the Wilderness are going to have a protest on Tuesday, the 27th of April in central London. Two suited pigs bearing corporate logos will gorge themselves on a trough of blood-stained banknotes outside the London Hilton on Park Lane to protest the corporate feeding frenzy taking place at the business conference Iraq Procurement 2004 Meet the Buyers. The protest is timed to coincide with the conference four-course gala dinner. The London Hilton on Park Lane is the official hotel of choice for the conference, at which representatives from 300 companies, including Shell, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Texaco, and the US arms manufacturer Raytheon, will be meeting members of the US-installed Iraqi government to discuss the wide range of opportunities available to make a profit out of the increasingly blood-soaked occupation of Iraq. Also attending the conference will be Brian Wilson, Tony Blair's special advisor on trade and investment, former US Rear Admiral David Nash, the man in charge of handing out $18 billion worth of US taxpayers' money for the reconstruction of Iraq, and BBC World Affairs editor John Simpson, the guest speaker at Tuesday's gala dinner. The conference takes place in the context of a series of new laws passed by the US last September that effectively put Iraq up for sale to foreign investors, a growing body of evidence that the way in which the Bush administration has been treating reconstruction contracts as prizes to be handed out to their friends has been delaying Iraq's recovery with potentially catastrophic consequences, and the ongoing repression of workers' rights in Iraq. It also takes place in the wake of killing of over 600 people in the US siege of Fallujah, the vast majority of whom were women, children and the elderly, according to the director of the town's general hospital. So, there'll be more about Fallujah later, as we said. So there's this protest which starts on the 27th of April and will probably be at Park Lane, but this may change, so do check the Voices in the Wilderness website at voicesinthewilderness.co.uk. And now we're going to a track, which is Judge Dredd.
Court is in session. Will you please stand? First, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Judge 100 Years. Some people call me Judge Dredd. Now, I am from Ethiopia. Try hard, you rude boys, for shooting black people. In my court, on the beat car, cause I'm vexed, and I am the rude boy today. Two gun test?
Yes, sir.
Rude boy Adolphus Jakes?
Yes, sir.
Rude boy Emmanuel Zachariah Zaki Palm?
Yes, sir.
George Grubman Flea?
Present.
Adolphus James?
Yes, sir.
I see where you have been charged with 10 shooting intent. 5 murder charge, 6 grab and flee charge.
But you are not.
Hush up! Guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty, sir.
I don't care what they say, take 400 years, stand down. Emmanuel Zachariah Zakipam?
Yes, sir.
You've been charged 15 charge of shooting intent, 15 murder charge. And I heard that you was the one down there in Sutton Street who tell the judge rude boys don't kill. Well, business King Street, And my name is Judge Dredd, and I don't care. Now take 400 years.
I don't know what I'm going to say, you know, Your Honor, because...
Oh, shut, what, they tried to shoot me, too?
No, Your Honor, but I didn't say,
well, quiet.
Somebody, yes,
400 more years for you. Judge Robin Flea.
Yes, sir.
Stop your crying. Good boys don't cry, that's what I hear.
I didn't read your notes now. I don't give you a chance.
I don't care. Hush up. This is my court. You're charged for robbing school children. Robbery, aggravation.
Good man, I take my sentence. You know, son, he's a shooting man, you know. I said, I'm a judge, come and come try, you know, son. I take my sentence, you know, sir.
Hush up. Adolfo Shapes.
Yes, sir.
You rob school children. You boom the people's house. You shot black people.
But you're an adult.
Hush up. Just for talking, I now charge you for contempt. And that is a separate 100 years. I hereby sentence you to 400 years. I said, hush up, hush up. You are sentenced to 400 years and 500 lashes. I am going to set an example. I, rude boys, don't cry, don't cry. When I was in Africa, here, you were tough.
I'm not guilty.
Put a turn, take them away.
Okay, you're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. This was posted to the UK Newswire by Trident Ploughshares on the 21st of the 4th, 2004. And the headline they've put is Campaigners Break into Top UK Nuke Race as Vanunu Walks Free. Four peace campaigners today marked the release of Israeli nuclear whistleblower Mordecai Vanunu by evading security and breaking into the Command and Control Centre for Britain's nuclear weapons programme. The campaigners from Trident Ploughshares dressed in Vanunu masks and whistleblower suits to gain entrance to the top security RAF Northwood. They searched for evidence of deployment and threatened use of nuclear weapons in contravention of international law. Joss Garman, a spokesperson for the group, explained Mordecai Vanunu has probably done more to expose illegal weapons of mass destruction than anyone else in the world, and all without bombing a single Iraqi. Rather than winning the Nobel Prize he so clearly deserves, Vanunu has been imprisoned for 18 years, including 12 years in solitary confinement. He continued, "Today we acted to continue with the vital work started by Vanunu and to expose the hypocrisy and secrecy that is government policy towards Britain's own weapons of mass destruction. Next week, ambassadors from the UK will meet in New York to talk about disarmament, but we need Blair to lead by example and to disarm his own illegal and immoral weapons of mass destruction now." Trident Ploughshares is a campaign to disarm UK Trident nuclear weapon systems in a non-violent, open, peaceful and fully accountable manner. The activists were Joss Garman, Graham Thompson, Sarah Sharaka and Philip Gordon. And their homepage is www.tridentploughshares.org.
Now this is a story from Colombia about the family of an employee of Coca-Cola who were machine gunned. And it was posted to the Indie Media UK Wire by the Colombia Solidarity Campaign this morning. At 7 o'clock yesterday morning, April the 20th, various armed men with machine guns entered the home of the brother of Coca-Cola union leader Efrain Guerrero's wife in Bucaramanga and fired indiscriminately at the family, killing Efrain's brother-in-law, Gabriel Remolina, his wife Fanny, and wounding three of their children. One of these children, Robinson Remolina, is in grave condition in hospital. This is not the first time that the families of Sinal Trinal union leaders... Now, Sinal Trinal is the Colombian Food and Beverages Union, and they've often been the victims of this kind of violence. This is all happening in the context of the labour conflict against Coca-Cola, where Coca-Cola are trying to fire workers due to their closing of production lines. Now, the president of the union, Sinal Trinal, is called Luis Javier Correa Suarez, and he asked that you'll send letters of protest to the Colombian president, Alvaro Uribe Vélez. Now, if you want to write to them, to him, you'll address them to His Excellency Alvaro Uribe Vélez at the President of the Republic, Carrera 8, numbers 7 to 26, Palacio de Nariño, Bogotá, Colombia. Although it might be easier to send an email to him at www.presidencia.gov.co and click on Escribale al Presidente at the bottom of the page.
I was riding in my car, screaming at the night, screaming at the dark, screaming at fright. I wasn't doing nothing, just driving about, screaming at the dark, letting it out. That's all I was doing, just letting it out. Well, along comes a motorcycle, very much to my surprise. I said, "Officer, was I speeding?" I couldn't see his eyes. He said, "No, you weren't speeding." And he felt where his gun was hung. He said, "Lady, you were screaming at the top of your lung. And you were doing it alone, you were doing it alone. You were screaming in your car in a 20-mile zone. You were doing it alone, you were doing it alone. You were screaming. You were doing it alone, you were doing it alone. You were screaming in your car in a 20-mile zone. You were doing it alone, you were doing it alone. You were screaming." I said, "I'll roll up all my windows, don't want to disturb the peace. I'm just a creature who's looking for a little release." I said, "And what's so wrong with screaming? Don't you do it at your games? When the quarterback breaks an elbow, when the boxer beats a mames. But you were doing it alone, you were doing it alone. You were screaming in your car in a 20-mile zone. You were doing it alone, you were doing it alone. You were screaming. You were doing it alone, you were doing it alone. You were screaming in your car in a 20-mile zone. You were doing it alone, you were doing it alone. You were screaming." I said, "Animals roar when they feel like." I said, "Why can't we do that too? Instead of screaming, bonsai baby. In the war, in the human." He said, "I got to take you in now. Follow me right behind. And let's have no more screaming like you're out of your mind." So he climbed aboard his cycle, and his red-eyed headlight beamed, and his motor started spinning, and his siren screamed. He was doing it alone, he was doing it alone. He was screaming on his bike in a 20-mile zone. He was doing it alone, he was doing it alone. He was screaming. "I was doing it alone, I was doing it alone. I was screaming in my car in a 20-mile zone. I was doing it alone, I was doing it alone. I was screaming. We were doing it together, we were doing it together. We were screaming at the dark in a 20-mile zone. We were doing it together, we were doing it together. We were screaming. We were doing it together, we were doing it together. We were doing it together, we were doing it together. We were doing it together, we were doing it together. We were doing it together, we were doing it together alone in a 20-mile zone."
Mayday Dublin 2004 for an alternative Europe. Irish people have generally seen the European Union as a good thing for reasons that include investment in infrastructure and farm subsidies. But increasingly, the EU is an excuse for privatisation, for shifting the burden of taxation, and for Ireland's increasing involvement in military adventures. They say we are struggling with others across Europe for a different type of Europe, one that puts people before profit and does away with top-down decision-making. They're calling for people to join the protests in a struggle for an alternative Europe.
Privatisation and the Lisbon Agenda. The Irish government's official EU website declares that the Lisbon strategy is a major priority for the Irish presidency. The Lisbon Agenda specifically targets gas, electricity, postal and transport services for privatisation. Water, health, education and social services will be next. The first step in privatisation is forcing people to pay for public services to make them profitable and attractive to investors. We can see this here with the bin charges, the backdoor reintroduction of third-level fees, and the threatened privatisation of Dublin Bus and other public services. Privatisation invariably results in worse working conditions, greater inequality. So who set the Lisbon agenda? Who decided that this is how the European economy should be run? It is estimated that Brussels hosts some 500 industry lobby groups and employs some 10,000 professional lobbyists. Corporations spend millions lobbying the EU. Make no secret of the influence that this brings. One of the most powerful is the European Round Table of Industrialists, ERT, which brings together more than 40 European industrial leaders. Ireland is represented by Michael Smurfit. While most of the other corporations are household names across Europe, such as, wait for it, I bet you can guess who they are, BP, Unilever, Carlsberg, Fiat, Vodafone, Volvo, Philips, Nokia, Renault and Shell. Funnily enough, the people that are sponsoring the Iraqi procurement conference.
What sort of Europe do we want? The groups and individuals involved in the grassroots network are united by a vision of a better future. One without bosses or governments, be they in Dublin or Brussels. One in which all local communities are directly run by the people living in them, and all workplaces by the people working in them. A future in which everyone has control over their own lives and an equal say in the decisions that affect them. They're not talking just about receiving an equal share of what is produced, but also about transforming the quality of life, doing away with long working hours and increasing free time. And that can only be a good thing. Now, on Friday, the 9th of April, a few people from the Dublin Grassroots Network sacrificed their lunch breaks to busk and hand out leaflets. The press were there, taking their pictures and doing their interviews with this nefarious secret organisation. And these leaflets clearly explained the reasons why the collective are calling for this May Day weekend of actions against the EU heads of state. But these reasons have so far been ignored by the corporate media. Grassroots Network operates in an open and democratic way where everybody has an equal say. So if you'd like to get in touch, these are the contact details. You can phone on 087-282-0906, and that's a Dublin line, so if you prefix that with a 00353 and drop the first O, you'll get through. But easier still to email them at grassrootsdublin@yahoo.com. And if you're looking for more info on the web, go to www.grassrootsgathering.freeservers.com, struggle.ws/EU Fortress, or www.indymedia.ie. Now, for the May Day menu of what you've got to expect in Dublin, with the Actions for an Alternative Europe as an aperitif, you'll have the Critical Mass meeting, which involves cycling and walking through the city at 5:30 in the afternoon of Friday, April the 30th, starting at the Garden of Remembrance in Parnell Square. Followed by entrees with the No Borders meeting, Actions Against Fortress EU at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, May the 1st. That's at the Civic Offices on Wood Quay. Reclaim the City, Anti-Privatisation Actions, 2:30 on the afternoon of Saturday, May the 1st, Grafton Street and Stephen's Green. The main course, Bring the Noise, march to Family House to let the EU heads of state hear us. Bring pots, pans, whistles and sundry noisemakers. 6 in the evening, Saturday, May the 1st, Phoenix Park. Come by Parkgate Street or Benburb Street. Now for dessert, you have the No Borders Camp. Act in solidarity with immigrants. 11 o'clock, Sunday morning, May the 2nd, Customs House Quay. And to finish the meal with a digestif, you have the Reclaim the Streets street party for a better future. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, this is going to be a long one, on Monday, May the 3rd at the Ambassador Cinema on O'Connell Street.
And if you can't make it to Dublin, there's a sports group in London. The fine chap and ladies at Not Cricket invite all to join them in their cricket whites for May Day Anarchist Cricket in Leicester Square at 1 p.m. on May Day. Not Cricket stands for Nice Overtly Tailored Chaps, rebelling, insisting capitalism kills everything totally. In true Yabasta style, they will be padding up and dressing in white. The dress code is set. Everyone attending must be dressed in whites, no ghastly logos, and be prepared to wield a bat against the global menace. Their slogan is, bring your trusty wooden bat, swing for glory and whack capitalism across the boundary, turning to old British values of fair play. They explain why they are taking up this traditional sport for May Day. Cricket is a game of gentlemanly conduct where players act in a sportsmanlike manner. However, modern man is not a gentleman. He is an aggressive man. Business, politics and sport have all been corrupted by the ogre of capitalism. There is no place anymore for gentlemanly behaviour in the modern boardroom or playing field. Our communities are ruined by multinationals. Our sports are drowned under a sea of logos, and our governments are being taken over by warmongering bullies. Ladies and gentlemen, it's just not cricket. There used to be a time in cricket when a batsman would walk back from the crease to the pavilion if he had been outed and the umpire had not noticed. For being a gentleman, he would be applauded by all. Unfortunately now, especially in the corporate-sponsored, garishly coloured international game, this custom has been abandoned. In today's game, winning is everything and the game comes second. According to Not Cricket, anarchism is much like cricket. Our government and their corporate bedfellows are not fit to rule us. We wish to live in a society where people accept, befriend and work with each other, much like the game of cricket. We still have laws. However, we do not rely on a corrupt body to decide and implement them. We do not act to exploit and trick our fellow players. So, they say, meet 1 p.m, the Bat and Ball, Bear Street, off Leicester Square, May Day. And you can see this report, it's posted to www.indymedia.org.uk to the Newswire.
here's a report posted to The Wire by someone calling themselves Pixie. Baltina at Thornborough. On Saturday, May the 1st, there's going to be a celebration of the ancient festival of Baltina at Thornborough Henge. Meet at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the Central Henge. It transpired at the Easter weekend that Tarmac now own the central and southern henges of the Triple Henge complex at Thornborough. Tarmac is the quarry company whose plans for bulk gravel extraction threaten the sacred landscape that surrounds this historic monument. It seems pretty clear that what they intend to do is to press ahead with their destructive proposals in spite of overwhelming opposition from archaeologists and local people. Obviously, this entails trespassing on Tarmac's land, but we feel that this is entirely justified given the purpose for which Tarmac has acquired the henges. The central henge itself is easily accessible from a nearby road across a few feet of open ground. Guests are invited to dress colourfully as befits the occasion, and musicians are especially welcome. For more information, please contact oliverhazelfurniture.co.uk. And I've also been asked to mention the Peculiar Vision Dance Festival in the nearby village of Massam, also taking place on the May Day weekend. More details at www.massamshire.com. Let's make it a Baltina to remember. Now, a few facts about Thornborough Henge. Thornborough Henge is the only triple henge monument in the world. Its three henges are part of a wider ritual landscape consisting of six henges and including three great standing stones at nearby Borough Bridge. Thornborough is the oldest known monument in the world to be aligned with the three stars of Orion's belt. The Great Pyramids of Egypt are also arranged in this pattern. The henges are 5,000 years old and were in continuous use for 1,000 years, attracting pilgrims from all corners of Britain and further afield. The existing quarry at Thornborough has already destroyed 200 separate archaeological features. Tarmac will be applying for planning permission to quarry further into the henge area sometime after March 2004. The henges, which are near Ripon in Yorkshire, are a unique complex of these three massive Bronze Age circular monuments. One of the largest earth-moving operations in prehistoric Europe, the henges are comparable to Westminster, York and Canterbury cathedrals being built in a single location. For such a project to have been undertaken indicates that at the very least, Thornborough was the spiritual capital of Northern England. In use for over a millennium, this 5,000-year-old site is now under threat of ruin. Tarmac's proposals to carry out bulk gravel extraction right up to the perimeter of the henges will destroy areas of known archaeology, including the ceremonial causeway that serves at the entrance as the entrance to the southernmost henge. Post-hole alignments that pepper the surrounding landscape and may hold the key to Thornborough's astronomical significance will be lost forever. The impact of the quarrying will effectively create henge islands, a hideous disfigurement of the ritual landscape. The movement to save the Thornborough henges has already begun, with 98% of local people signing a petition organised by the Friends of Thornborough campaign group. These determined locals are now appealing to anyone who feels passionate about defending the spiritual landscape to join their fight. To learn more about the henges and the proposed quarry plans, please visit the website www.friendsofthornborough.org.
Hello,
now we have some excerpts from the second report that Jo Wilding published about her experiences in Fallujah. For people that don't know, Jo Wilding was kidnapped and she was held for about 6 hours and finally released. And here's some of her words on that. I'm not going to read them all because the report is very long, but do check out her report. It's on the front page of indiemedia.co.uk. And this is what Jo says. Thank you so much to everyone who sent emails following the last Fallujah story and who passed the story on. Things have been hectic and I'm sorry, but I haven't been able to reply to you all, but thanks. April the 17th, Fallujah 2. Sergeant Trapner of the 1st Armoured Division is irritated. Get back or you get killed, are his opening words. Lee says, we're press. And he looks with disdain at the car. In this piece of... I can't say that on the radio at this time. Make us less of a target for kidnappers, Lee tells him. Suddenly, he decides he recognises Lee from the TV. Based in Germany, he watches the BBC. He sees Lee on TV all the time. Cool, hey, can I have your autograph? Lee makes a scribble, unsure who he's meant to be, but happy to have a ticket through the checkpoint, which all the cars before us have been turned back from. And Sergeant Trapner carries on. You guys be careful in Fallujah. We're killing loads of those folks. Detecting a lack of admiration on our part, he adds, well, they're killing us too. I like Fallujah. I killed a bunch of them mofos. I wish Sergeant Trapner were a caricature, a stereotype, but these are all direct quotations. We fiddle with our hijabs in the roasting heat. You don't have to wear those things anymore, he says. You're liberated now. And he laughs. I mention that more and more women are wearing hijabs nowadays because of increasing attacks on them. A convoy of aid vehicles flying red crescent flags approaches the checkpoint, hesitates. We don't like to encourage them, Sergeant Trapner explains, his tongue loosened by the excitement of finding someone to talk to. Geez, it's good to meet someone that speaks English. Well, apart from Mr. and Please and Why. Haven't you got translators? Someone asks him. Sergeant Trapner points his rifle in the direction of the lead vehicle in the convoy. I got the best translator in the world, he says. One ambulance comes through with us, the rest turn back. We get to Fallujah. Food, water, medicine at the clinic and the mosque, which have come in on the back roads. The relief effort for the people there has been enormous, but the hospital is in the US-held part of town, cut off from the clinic by sniper fire. They can't get any of the relief supplies in the hospital, nor the injured people out. We load the ambulance with disinfectant, needles, bandages, food and water and set off, equipped this time with loudspeakers, pull up to a street corner and get out. The hospital is to the right, quite a way off. The Marines are to the left. Four of us in blue paper smocks walk out, hands up, calling out that we're a relief team trying to deliver supplies to the hospital. There's no response, and we walk slowly towards the hospital. We need the ambulance with us, because there's more stuff than we can carry. So we call out that we're going to bring an ambulance with us, that we'll walk and the ambulance will follow. The nose of the ambulance edges out into the street, shiny and new, brought in to replace the ones destroyed by sniper fire. Shots rip down the street, two bangs and a zipping noise uncomfortably close. The ambulance springs back into the side road like it's on a piece of elastic, and we dart into the yard of the corner house and out through the side gate, so we're back beside the vehicle. This time, we walk away from the hospital towards the Marines, just us and the loudspeaker, no ambulance, to try and talk to them properly. Slowly, slowly, we take steps, shouting that we're unarmed, that we're a relief team, that we're trying to get supplies to the hospital. Another two shots dissuade us. I'm furious. From behind the wall, I inform them that their actions are in breach of the Geneva Conventions. How would you feel if it was your sister in that hospital, unable to get treated because some man with a gun wouldn't let the medical supplies through? David takes me away as I'm about to call down a plague of warts on their trigger fingers. I'm going to finish Joe's report now because we have an intro that we're going to play that's some 20 minutes long, which is a mix of May Day things and also a report from Julia Guest, who's a filmmaker that's based in Iraq. So do enjoy it and we'll see you all next week. So that's goodbye from us on Indie Media Radio London.
Brian Williams.
Good evening. For only the third time in his presidency, George W. Bush is about to take questions from reporters in a primetime news conference format tonight from the East Room of the White House. The president has an opening statement on the situation in Iraq, and before his arrival in the East Room, let's hear from our Washington Bureau Chief and the moderator of Meet the Press.
After 9/11, what would your biggest mistake be, would you say, and what lessons have you learned from it?
I wish you'd have given me this written question ahead of time so I could plan for it. I'm sure something will pop in my head here in the midst of this press conference, all the pressure of trying to come up with an answer, but it hadn't yet. I just put me under the spot here, and maybe I'm not as quick on my feet as I should be in coming up with one. One thing is for certain, though, about me. I mean, I'm sick. Thank you all very much.
Aspetta anche lei la May Day Parade?
Beh sì, fino al 1° maggio a Milano, è un po' lunga.
Ah, vedo anche lei tendenze Pink Silver.
Già beh, e allora?
Allora, giovedì 22 aprile, ore 19, in attesa della prata del precariato e del blocco addotta alla catena, in gana d'attesa bevendo un drink al cocktail block.
Il solito caffè.
Bologna, sui viali, vicino al castello di Porta Santo Stefano, e Milano, piazza Graziano Previelis, ex dei mercanti. A inseguire, Critical Mass.
Euromedei 2004, Milano, Barcellona.
Well, this is it. This week and next weekend, IMF and World Bank protests, plus a national pro-choice march. The waiting is over. It is the time. It is the hour to step up to the plate. The action begins on Tuesday, April 20th. It will be a teach-in on a connection between corporate globalization and war, like in Iraq, at 2027 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest, 7 p.m., sponsored by MGJ and Dawn. On Wednesday, high noon, in front of the IMF, in front of the World Bank, actually, in Borough Park at 18th and H, the unhappy birthday party, 60 years of oppression and devastation at the hands of the IMF and World Bank. And Thursday is Earth Day. on Earth Day, environmental activists will descend on the IMF and World Bank to show what we think of the IMF support for dams, for mining, for oil and gas, and other environmentally destructive projects. And then comes Saturday, April 24th, the main march against the IMF and the World Bank. Gather high noon, Franklin Square Park, 13th and K Street. There'll be a short rally, followed by a march around the city to a variety of corporate targets, to the headquarters of the IMF and World Bank, some more corporate targets, and back to the park as we turn our backs on the enemy for a festival of resistance. The festival is going to feature pinned structural adjustment on the country, a dunking booth where you try to dunk your favorite IMF World Bank official, an asymmetric tug of war where the rich, fat Western countries get the easy end of the rope and the world's poor countries get the hard end of the rope to pull, and others. And April 25th, Sunday, the big day, that is the day, that is the time, that is the hour where we join forces against both halves of this beast. The IMF and the World Bank on the one hand, the Bush regime on the other hand.
Mayday, mayday. Tutti i precari e le precarie sono invitati all'Euro Mayday 004, in contemporanea a Milano e Barcellona, con presidi alle catene commerciali la mattina, grande parata con cicli e carri al pomeriggio e al cadere della notte sabba di San Precario, con bande itineranti e assedio al Castello Sforzesco. Mayday, mayday, sabato 1 maggio, Porta Ticinese, ore 15, che San Precario vegli su tutti noi.
Can't let a few people, and I say a few, listen, there was enough to cause harm, but a few relative to the rest of the peoples. You just can't let, you know, a small percentage of the Iraqi people decide the fate of everybody, and that's what you're seeing.
The people of Fallujah have fought hard, and the American invasion of Fallujah is causing a violent backlash. Gunfire, an ambulance rushes to the scene as an American tank burns on the main road to Fallujah. Every day, more Iraqis take up arms against the occupation, disgusted at mounting civilian casualties in Fallujah and the south of Iraq, where U.S. military is fighting the Mehdi army of Muqtada al-Sadr.
We are seeing anti-democratic forces, enemies of freedom. And they simply have to be gotten out of the body politic here for Iraq to move forward.
AC-130 gunship, which is a very big aerial weapon that comes in and fires these real rat-a-tat rounds. So they've been attacking somebody in the city tonight quite heavily. Of course, we don't know who, but the Marines are definitely on the offensive again.
Hundreds of women and children and men of non-military age fleeing Fallujah today, taking advantage of a 90-minute pause in the fighting to escape. More than 450 civilians have been killed in 6 days. carnage which prompted Adnan Pachachi, a leading member of the U.S.-appointed Iraqi Governing Council, to condemn Operation Vigilant Resolve today as unacceptable and illegal.
June 30th, you're going to turn the keys over to the Iraqis. Who do you turn them over to?
Well, that's a good question, and it's an important part of the ongoing crisis we have here now.
There are only a few journalists inside Fallujah. We have a report tonight from one of them.
The collective punishment is going on. It's being dished out by the Americans. The entire city has been without power and electricity since those four Blackwater security men were killed there about roughly a week ago, maybe a little bit longer. So the entire city is under collective punishment by the Americans. It is, for the most part, sealed off. Very difficult for people to go in and out. And everyone's being shot. I would go out on a limb and call it collective punishment when women carrying white flags are being shot, old women, children and elderly are being shot on a daily basis, and ambulances are being shot and destroyed by the Americans. The people of Fallujah are basically fighting to maintain their own city. They don't want the Americans there, and they're trying to protect their own people. And it was the U.S. initially that initiated this invasion to begin with, as well as this onslaught on Fallujah.
The U.S. Marines have been occupying houses in Fallujah. Again, my cameraman was there and witnessed the fact that the U.S. Marines were situating themselves in rooms of houses to shoot people to catch that. At one point, when they declared a ceasefire, and people went out to go shopping, and they shot people who ventured out into the street.
I saw in Adamiya, a heavily Sunni district in Baghdad, at the big mosque of Abu Hanifa, people were taking up a collection of everything from food to blood sent to Fallujah. And one of the things I saw were just unbelievable numbers of burial trucks. Huge numbers of burial trucks they are taking to Fallujah. So it is possible that casualties are significantly higher. It's interesting to me that one Marine says that they're all anti-coalition forces, and another Marine officer is quoted as saying, these guys in Fallujah, they're fighting, they're hiding behind civilians, hiding behind women and children. They're cowards. I mean, they should at least figure out which story they're going with.
Oh, when the Yanks go marching in, go marching in. When the Yanks go marching in, boys, I want to be in that number. When the Yanks go marching in.
The head of Central Command, General John Abizaid, on a surprise visit to the battlefront, insisted Marines were not to blame.
We are the most precise and the most compassionate military force that's ever been assembled, and we do not ever target civilians. We do not ever target civilians.
Mr. President, in the last campaign, you were asked the question about the biggest mistake you've made in your life, and you used to like to joke that it was trading Sammy Sosa. You look back before 9/11 for what mistakes might have been made after 9/11. What would your biggest mistake be, would you say, and what lessons have you learned from it?
I wish you'd have given me this written question ahead of time so I could plan for it. John, I'm sure historians will look back and say, gosh, you could have done it better this way or that way. You know, I just, I'm sure something will pop in my head here in the midst of this press conference, all the pressure of trying to come up with an answer, but it hadn't yet. I would have gone into Afghanistan the way we went into Afghanistan. Even though what I know today about the stockpiles of weapons, I still would have called upon the world to deal with Saddam Hussein. See, I happen to believe that we'll find out the truth on the weapons. That's why we sent up the independent commission. I look forward to hearing the truth, because exactly where they are, they could still be there. They could be hidden like the 50 tons of mustard gas in a turkey farm. One of the things that Charlie Dulford talked about was that he was surprised at the level of intimidation he found amongst people who should know about weapons and their fear of talking about them, so they don't want to be killed. So there's this kind of, there's a terror still in the soul of some of the people in Iraq. They're worried about getting killed, and therefore they're not going to talk. And it'll all settle out. John will find out the truth about the weapons at some point in time. However, the fact that he had the capacity to make them bothers me today, just like it would have bothered me then. He's a dangerous man. He's a man who actually not only had weapons of mass destruction, the reason I can say that with certainty is because he used them. And I have no doubt in my mind that he would like to have inflicted harm or paid people to inflict harm or trained people to inflict harm on America because he hated us. I don't want to sound like I've made no mistake. I'm confident I have. I just haven't. You put me under the spot here, and maybe I'm not as quick on my feet as I should be in coming up with one. Yeah, I am.
Who are these people who elected them? And how do I replace them with some of my friends? Are you listening? No power without accountability. Are you listening? No power without accountability. Are you listening? No power without accountability.
Julia Guest described one of those shot during the ceasefire.
When I arrived, I found a woman who I think was in her 70s who had decided to try and help her sons get out of the city. They decided to leave as a family group. And so she'd just taken the decision to walk out of her front door waving a white flag because they knew they were in a very heavily... There was a lot of shooting in their area. And she was shot in the stomach and the foot. So I found her in the hospital with one of her sons in quite a state. And she was evacuated in a small van that had volunteered to come out from Baghdad and picked her up and took her back to Baghdad.
What day was she shot?
She was shot the 10th, which was during the ceasefire.
Filmmaker Julia Guest says the clinic's ambulance was shot twice by American snipers, also during the ceasefire. The second time the ambulance was shot, it was carrying American and British citizens who had negotiated an agreement with the Marines to rescue the injured from an area with heavy U.S. sniper fire.
Now, it has blue sirens. It was donated from the Kingdom of Spain. It's very clearly an ambulance. It's carrying oxygen bottles. And the damage to the ambulance was such that two of the wheels are totally wrecked on it now as well. So they were left without an ambulance after that. And there are bullet holes in the side of the ambulance from the second shooting. And other bits and pieces, you see small bullet holes all over the place for this ambulance.
You've been listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance 104.4.
Why not filming, right?
No, I'm good.
Sorry, you're saying?